All right, welcome back, everyone, to the Language of Behavior. It has been a hot minute since we've had a guest, Charlie Peck, but today we are in store for a wonderful conversation with Dr. Bean, who's out in California. Charlie, before we begin the conversation with our fantastic guest, I just wanted to say hello first, and how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to see you. It's great to have Dr. Bean here. This is going to be such an important conversation, y'all.
It truly is. I mean, we are very particular about our guests. And so Dr. Bean is someone that we are truly honored to be in his presence. And he has such an amazing story. I would love to start there, Dr. Bean, if you're okay with that, because sure. I've seen news articles. I've seen news videos of your story. It's incredible. It's impactful. I don't know if you're wanting to jump all the way back to when you were a wee little child. I know there was a Operation Baby Lift that a lot of folks don't know about. I wasn't privy to that information. I don't remember learning about that in the history books, but I found it fascinating going through some of your history there and how you were brought over and adopted. So will you share a little bit about your journey just as a young child?
Of course, Joshua. First of all, thank you, Charlie and Joshua, for having me on your podcast. I've heard great things about your podcast, by the way. So thank you for having me as a guest. You know, Joshua, I've been in education for 28 years and often asked, hey, you know, why are you in education? And I always tell them, well, actually didn't start when I was a teacher, but it started when I came over from Vietnam. And so if I can share a little bit, 71, I was born in Vietnam during the height of the Vietnam War. And because the war caused havoc on our health system, and so they only had enough polio vaccinations to give to every other child. I tell people, actually, I was a blessed and lucky one to actually not get the polio vaccination, because I wouldn't be sitting in front of you right now had I gotten it. Let me tell you why. At the age of 2, I contracted polio because I didn't get the vaccination. Left me paralyzed from the waist down and severe scoliosis. And my parents couldn't take care of me, so they abandoned me on the streets of Saigon and then brought in by an orphanage to care for me for a couple years. And then in 75, you said this, Joshua, you referred to it. Operation Baby Lift was executed by President Ford. And what it was this operation to airlift over 3,000 Vietnamese refugees to the United States to then be placed into foster homes or to be adopted. That's what happened. I remember the day vividly, April 6, 1975, literally days before Saigon was to fall. It was such a chaotic day. The orphanage staff was trying to get all these babies on these planes, and they mistakenly put me on one plane and my braces and records on another. And as fate would have it, the plane I was supposed to be on actually took off and it crashed. And so over 100 people died on that day, including about 93 orphans on that flight that I was supposed to be on. So I came over to the United States on another flight safely, and that's where I would meet the Beans. So that's a little bit about historical context in terms of how I came over. But the reason why I'm in education is because of the Beans. Judy, my foster mother at the time, who would later adopt me, they took in over 100 foster kids. And many of those foster kids had severe disabilities like myself, or even were severely abused. And so my mom always taught me, we have to have compassion and love for the most vulnerable in our community and be voices for them. And then my dad was a staunch sixth grade teacher. He was a sixth grade teacher his whole life. One school, one grade level. And he said, Stefan, you must prioritize education because education will unlock the potential in you. And then he also said, that was much more meaningful. He said, Stefan, prioritize education because through you, education will unlock the potential in others. And so that's where we're at. And I owe it to the Beans.
Wow. Truly is profound. Like when I think of all the background stories and all that you've been through, and then the level that you have reached, the impact you're making on education and the people in it. Tell me how your story helps to make that impact.
Oh, I love that question so much, Charlie. When I first became county superintendent of schools here in Orange County, I was quoted in an article saying that, you know what, I just want the 450,000 kids to know that I've got their back. So if you are a student with disability, if you have a speech impediment, if you are an English learner, if you're homeless, a foster youth, I understand because I was all of that. And so I got your back. And so all of the incidences, all of the events that I have lived through my whole life has brought me to a point where I can be empathetic for the youth and the students that we serve.
I want to talk about your journey as a student, Dr. Bean, because I can't remember where I heard it or I saw it, but you had talked about a teacher specifically. think it was sixth grade, Mr. G.
Yeah.
I'm wondering why he was kind of that fork in the road for you, where you were struggling before, but then after that point, yeah. I mean, your educational journey took off.
Yeah.
Where then your grades got better, you got into college. Yeah. It really felt like this person was kind of this key figure. And I'm curious what Mr. G was to you.
Yeah, Joshua, I think that all of us can remember that one teacher, or I even get choked up thinking about him, or one adult that certainly has, that changes the trajectory of life by the simple words that they say or something they whisper in your ear. And that was Mr. Geisinger. So in kindergarten through fifth grade, I didn't do very well in education. And you can probably imagine why. A, I was pulled out quite often because I had a disability and they didn't know how to educate students with disabilities back in the 70s and 80s. Two, I had multiple surgeries that left me out of the classroom for a significant period of time. In fact, one as a 10-year-old was a spinal fusion. And because I had severe scoliosis, to straighten the spinal cord, they had to cut down my spinal cord, chisel each vertebrae, and then put two Harrington rods and wrap these cords around the spinal cord so that I could sit up straight. And that left me in a body cast from neck to ankle for 9 months. And so because of things like that and being pulled out of classroom, I just never really got accustomed to academic success. And then in sixth grade, I met Mr. Geisinger. And I remember a few weeks into being in his class, he pulled me aside and he said, "Stefan, look, I don't care that you are in a wheelchair. I don't care the fact that you barely speak, English. What I do notice is that you have the gift and you have this gift of gab." And he said that you like to talk a lot. And I did, right? I got in trouble a lot because I just talked a lot. And so he said, "Because you like to talk a lot and you're a very good communicator, you're going to only give oral presentations this entire year." So I didn't have to do a test. I didn't have to write. And because of that, it really built my confidence as a communicator. And so much so that I was asked to speak in front of 15,000 people in Washington, D.C. at the age of 14. And so as you can imagine, that teacher, that moment really built and set me up for success after that.
Wow. And that's the kind of impact that people do with making the system. And it's so important that they hear that. And so I understand that you've experienced some loss in the last couple of years, and people as adults impacted you as well. So are you okay to talk about that?
Absolutely. After I started doing well in middle school, high school, I got scholarship to go to USC. And then I went on to get my master's and my doctorate. And I tell people I became a doctor because I was tired of people comparing me to Mr. Bean, the comedian. So I wanted to be called Dr. Bean. But as I reflect on all those accomplishments, none greater than meeting Janet at USC. We court and we finally get married. We have a beautiful family. My wife had Janet at the time had started to experience migraine headaches. And so we went to the migraine clinic for about 6 months. That didn't work. Anyways, it's discovered she has metastatic breast cancer. And so the breast cancer already went to the brain, and she had over 12 lesions in her brain with a death sentence of 6 months, actually. We have always been supported by our community, by God, by people, that she was able to outlast that and live 6 years. So during those 6 years, though, as you can imagine, it's very difficult. And so our children, our four beautiful children, beginning to exhibit mental health challenges, anxiety, depression, you name it, right? They went through the whole gambit. So I think in education in general, we have to understand that every child who suffers through mental health challenges has a story behind that. And we as adults need to be empathetic and understand and ask questions. And that's what our school did for our kids. They rallied around our kids, and a few of them went to counseling. I made sure to communicate. We had friends that rallied around us. And so that when Janet passed away in 2020, they were in a place where they could move forward, but not move on from the passing of their mom. So the support around us in the school system and community really helped our kids through that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the grieving process is just horrific. And a lot of people, especially our peers, don't know what to do during that time. Yeah. And so I'm just curious if you found anything that was effective, that was supporting to you during that tough time, that difficult time.
Yeah.
I think we talk a lot about mental health here, but a lot of folks don't really understand when someone's grieving, this is what I should do to actually help in that situation.
Such an important question to ask. So some of the things that we explicitly did was obviously our kids got counseling, but not just school counseling. I was able to make sure they had counseling outside as well. Of my four kids, three went that path. My son did not. He got his support through his peers and his friends and their friends' parents, who, as a parent myself, one thing is very important is we grieve as well through this kind of process. So it's okay for us to be open and vulnerable with other adults and parents. And so that's what I did. What I did was I was very open and vulnerable with my kids' friends' parents so that they could come alongside and support my kids right when they met, when they went into their house and played with their friends. And that was very important. Be open and have dialogue with other people so they can begin to understand your situation. That really helped my son and my three daughters. The other thing that we did was we talked about it. I did not shield my kids from what the brutal facts. Well, I don't know if you guys heard this, but I talk about this in my book, Stockdale Paradox. So Stockdale was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. And they noticed that half of the prisoners of war made it through and the other half did not. Well, the half that did not make it through is they had hope they would get out. But when the holidays approached and summer approached and they weren't rescued, that hope turned into despair. Then you had Stockdale who made it. What they realized was Stockdale and the other POWs that made it knew they had hope, but they also knew that they had brutal facts around them. And so I didn't hide that from my kids. They needed to understand this is a brutal time in their life, but there's hope for a better tomorrow. And I think that really got them through that. We can transform a situation through authentic hope.
I mean, we need to hear that so much in education today. So now you lead OCDE and you've overseen charter networks. I'm just curious how you balance all of that, because there is traditional education and there are constraints in that system for sure. So how do you do that, especially with so many student behaviors showing up? How are you balancing all of that?
Yeah, you're right. I have to balance being a single father with being a county superintendent in a very public figure, right? A public seat. And I think how I balance that is by being authentic with people and real with people. And that's one thing that I always encourage my kids to be vulnerable and authentic. One of the things that we talk about at in the county level is that we need to develop our students' emotional intelligence. But we do that first with developing emotional intelligent leadership within our own staff. And then we can turn around and train and develop our kids with that. And part of emotional intelligent leadership is being aware of your own feelings and emotions through a particular crisis, and then being able to manage that through that crisis with the support of others. And so we encourage that. One of the innovative things we do is peer advocacy for mental health. We train students to have real conversations, mental health conversations with other students, because a student would rather, like my son, would rather talk about his challenges that his mother is dying from cancer with one of his peers versus an adult. So to have peer advocacy is very important in a setting as well.
I want to go back to the quote that you had stated earlier about, I want our students to know that I've got their backs no matter what. And you also mentioned that there's so many students that are going through trauma, chronic stress, dysregulation, challenging behaviors. Yeah. Obviously, February typically around the nation is the highest referred month right now. So when you're working with your teachers and your staff, knowing that your students are going through so much difficult stuff, what are you doing to prepare to protect your children?
That's a great question. We have to prepare our teachers first. We have to prepare our adults first. And we have to partner with organizations, like even like yours, organizations that are actually experts in this field. I won't mention the organization, but this organization that we have been working with in the past few months has a whole library of how to be safe in social media. And so if we can train our own adults through that and understand the resources out there, then we can direct them to our kids. And so to answer your question, it's really about being prepared ourselves to then be able to not only react, but also to prevent, right? So we can certainly respond to and react and intervene when a mental crisis episode happens, but we can also prevent by preparing and getting ready should a crisis arise.
Yeah, so that makes me think about it. You did a, like the lifted framework. I think that's really good there because it goes back to those chronic behavior issues that it keeps showing up, but instilling that hope that you were talking about.
Yeah.
Because if we have the adults prepared and equipped, then that makes that job easier. But I just would love to know how you instill hope in both students and staff who feel stuck.
I think we as adults need to remember, look, I was a teacher and I have great empathy for teachers that they're being pulled in so many directions. You know, they're asked to be counselors, asked to be experts in special education, and asked to be lots of different things. And so because they're asked to do so much, we as leaders need to come alongside and support them. And we all have to have a vision for one singular thing, and that is that our job is to prepare the future workforce and the future community members of our culture and our society. And to do that is we have to have a others mindset. And that's what this lifted is about. It's like L is that we have to really listen and learn from each other and from our kids. And then as adults, we have to inspire inspire potential, just like Mr. G inspired in me, right? And then we have to foster authenticity by being real with our kids, being real with other adults. T is transformed through hope. We already talked about that, is that hope for the future, but face the brutal facts. That's how we transform through hope. And then all of that is so that we can empower kids and students' strength. Mr. G knew I had a gift of communication, but he didn't leave it at that. He empowered it by making me use the gift of communication. And then the D in lifted is all in the purpose of developing others, because one day they will outlast us, and they should, and they will take over our jobs and our roles in society. And so we have to develop others for that purpose. When teachers and adults begin to shift their mindset about why they're in teaching, why they're in education, is to lift our students through their challenges and barriers so they can become the future of us.
Yeah. And I mean, that's in your Lifted to Lead book. That framework mm-hmm. is truly powerful. All like the acronym is great. And we listened to some of your recent interviews and you shared really powerful stories behind each one of those principles.
Yeah.
So which one was the most transformative for you?
And your leadership? Pressure, Dr. Bean.
I know that's a big question.
I think it's actually the empower, strengthen others. So when Janet, a year before she would lose her verbal skills, maybe promised her that I would take care of the kids. She said, Stefan, promise me you'll take care of the kids. And of course, I knew she meant our kids, our four beautiful kids. But then as I reflect on it, I really think she also meant take care of the kids that I would come in contact with every day, the 450,000. Right here where I am right now. And when I start to realize that that's really what she meant, it was then about empowering our students' strengths and look at our kids through an asset perspective and not through the deficit perspective that we see our kids. And when we do that, we can then empower those assets so then we can develop them. So I think that's probably one of my favorite stories through that lifted framework.
Yeah. Very powerful. Well, I've been flashing, for those who are listening on the audio platforms, I've been flashing your website up as you've been speaking. So liftedtolead.com, and we'll have that in the show notes for folks. It's also a great place for folks to also check out your book. I want to highlight that. As far as your goal, Dr. Bean, when you wrote this book, what do you really want that ripple effect to be from this resource?
Yeah, you know what? It was basically, we all have stories and we all have challenges and barriers. I'm not the only one who has that. We all do. And so this book was written to give that one child who is about to face a major surgery, that one adult who's about to lose their spouse. You can overcome through others, letting others lift you. And because when you let others lift you, then you can be lifted over those circumstances. You know, I summarize it in this story is that when I was in high school, my classrooms were on the second floor, no elevator. And so when I'd come to school in my wheelchair, I'd roll up to the base of the stairs, and there would be four of my friends waiting, and they lifted me up those stairs every day to get to class. And I asked them why, and they said, "Stefan, we didn't do it because we felt sorry for you. We did it because we wanted you to get where we're going." So we truly want our students to get to where we're going. We need to lift. We need to come alongside them and lift them through their challenges, especially mental health challenges.
Charlie, should we lighten this conversation up and do a behind the banter? Can we bring Dr. Bean into our fun a little bit? Are you okay with that?
We need to. Yeah, there's okay. Just it's so powerful. But yeah,
yeah, probably this is such a beautiful conversation. Dr. Bean, if you're okay with it, we're gonna do a quick segment to end the conversation, but also to learn a little bit more of a fun fact about you.
Love it.
I didn't even prepare Dr. Bean for this, so he's probably going, "What on earth is happening right now?" But this is a fun time for us to get to know those who are behind the microphone. So Charlie and I do this every episode. And so I just want to know, Dr. Bean, you can kick us off. What was your favorite hobby growing up?
Wow. Growing up, playing Monopoly, probably. Love playing board games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Fun. So you just took everyone's property and just always cry, yeah, leave the table?
I was pretty ruthless, man. Yeah.
I love it. Charlie, what about you?
Sports. Any sport I could play, I loved. And I landed on volleyball eventually, but any sport, loved it.
Yeah.
What about you, Josh?
I'm not going to have the same answer as you, Charlie. So I'll say art. I was drawing constantly. I was not a great student. And typically I was drawing during class. So during school, I was drawing all the time. So that was definitely my hobby growing up.
Fun. Yeah. That wasn't too painful, right, Dr. Bean?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
All right. Dr. Bean, I want folks to be able to connect with you. Obviously, we're going to have links in the show notes for folks to be able to click and easily access you. We talked about your website. Is there one social media platform outside of the website that you want folks to connect with you on?
They can connect with me through LinkedIn at Stefan Bean, or it's pretty easy to find me on LinkedIn.
Perfect. And then I didn't want to go without highlighting your podcast, because you're a podcaster yourself. So Future Current is the title of the podcast. Will you just share out a little bit about that podcast?
Yeah. We do that as at the Orange County Department of Ed. And we started that podcast this year. And basically it's to really take the current issues that we all face and then highlight programs and people that actually give us hope for the future. And so that's what that podcast is about.
So cool. So we'll make sure we have the link for that also. So once you're done listening to this awesome conversation, we want you to head over and then check out Dr. Bean's wonderful podcast also. We always throw it to Charlie to end the conversation. So Charlie, how do you want to wrap this up?
Well, oftentimes I give some insight, like a last piece, but I would love to hand that to you, Dr. Bean. Is there one thing that we all need to remember for the future of education?
Yeah. Every child that we serve, whether it's our families serving their kids or educators serving kids, every child has that unlocked, beautiful potential in them. And it's really our job to inspire it and help cultivate it. And I know that every single teacher can do that and has done that, because they make a great impact on a kid like me.
For sure. So Dr. Bean, it's truly been an honor to have you on the podcast, to learn about your impactful story. You're doing amazing work, and we just thank you so much, not only for your time, but how you're serving your community, your students, your teachers, your parents.
Thank you, Joshua. Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and a podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.